Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and thank you so much for joining today's program. I pray you all had, in your long weekend, an eventful and significant observation of Memorial Day. I said on Friday's program, because I know some people get this confused, Memorial Day is not synonymous with Veterans Day. Veterans Day is the holiday where we observe to celebrate all of the living members of our military and our country. Memorial Day is this particular day that was set aside to honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice in service to our country through the military branches. This is why I said I don't find it to be appropriate to say we celebrate Memorial Day, but I do think it's worthy. We have a holiday for it, worthy to honor those who have given their lives in sacrifice for our country and to observe Memorial Day. So I pray and trust that you all had a significant and an eventful day of celebration, not celebration, a day of honoring and observing Memorial Day. But and if you didn't, praise God that his mercies are new every morning. And I don't think we have to wait until Memorial Day to have that type of disposition toward those who would dedicate themselves to selflessly defend our country. Now, having said that, I want to offer my daily encouragement, as I do all the time, just to remind you that family was never an afterthought for God, so it shouldn't be an afterthought for us. Having the opportunity and the privilege to serve God within the context of family is ministry. Too often, many of us are found expending ourselves in all manner of engagements only to offer our families the leftovers of a day well spent. And I just simply want to encourage you and remind you just to reverse that, not to allow that to happen within your individual context. You know, even if you're in a position where you cannot change the entire world, you can change your world. And I feel driven by the Spirit of God to remind us that, man, the times are short. You know, and in many instances, the enemy is taken captives, not outside, not on the far-flung, you know, beaches of the proverbial Normandy. I'm talking right in our own homes, man. And I simply want to encourage us to take up the reins beginning in our families. It's instructive that Jesus articulated the unfolding of the Great Commission beginning in Jerusalem, then to Judea and Samaria, and ultimately to the uttermost parts of the world. Certainly, Jesus' objectives wasn't to ignore the uttermost parts of the world, but he certainly didn't want us pursuing the uttermost parts of the world while neglecting Jerusalem. So let's serve our families well, with intentionality, with commitment, with investment, that the flag of the glory of God will be planted first and foremost within our own homes and within our own families. Praise God. I want to remind you, we're just a week away. Next week, on June 5th, I'll be preaching at the Turner Chapel. Monday mouth on a Tuesday at the Turner Chapel AME Church in Greenwood, Mississippi. Greenwood, Mississippi. The Turner Chapel AME Church. Looking forward to being there. You are all invited. I got permission from the pastor to invite all who would be interested from the radio audience. So you are all invited. If you live in the area or if you're willing to come to the area, the service will begin at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night next week, June 5th. You are all invited. And as well, in addition to the service next week, we're just a little over a month away from the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference. And again, you all are invited there. I talked to Will, who's organizing the conference, and the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is sponsored by the American Family Association, Urban Family Communications, and Hope Church, Tupelo, that there are more people registered already this year than attended last year. That's amazing. And that's why I keep telling you guys, if you want to come, don't wait till it's too late. You can still get your registrations in, but I urge you to do it now because it's people are registering. And I hate for you to want to be there but not be able to be there because you waited too long to register. All right. I feel like a sneeze is coming. If it does come, I'll have to catch it. So we're going to turn now in Matthew chapter 9. This is something that is burning in my heart to share. As I survey what's going on in our country. In Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. Here we go. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." And reading this struck me. It struck me. Because it's very easy in this era of keyboard warriors and the 24-hour news cycles, it's very easy to be confined to ideological corners and to where we can forget the humanity, and I would say even beyond the humanity, the transcendent reality that these people have souls that hang in the balance, where we can become, not all at once, but over time, become callous and become dry concerning the need for every man and every woman to receive the gospel. You notice right at the end of the passage, in verse 38, this is Jesus speaking, and he began speaking to his disciples by making the observation that the harvest is truly plentiful. And then he gave them this instruction to pray to the Lord of the harvest that laborers would be sent out into his harvest field. Now, I've shared before that it's the win-win, because the Lord of the harvest is the one to whom we pray, and the harvest field is his harvest field, right? I mean, he is the Lord of the harvest, and it's his harvest field. But he includes this instruction to pray that the Lord of the harvest send laborers out. And he makes that give that imperative instruction after he announces his own heart condition concerning the harvest. Said, man, he was moved with compassion. Splagnitzomai is the Greek word there. That he was compelled from his internal, his bowels moved him with compassion for the people who were the harvest field. And you cannot bypass the connection between Jesus' compassion and his instructive for his disciples to pray that the Lord of the harvest would send laborers. And the very simple rhetorical question I want to ask today to you all who are listening to the show, and I would submit to you that you are listening by God's divine design. When was the last time that you and I, that we together prayed for the Lord to send laborers into the harvest field? You know, when was the last time our hearts burned with compassion for those who, according to Scripture, the Bible would describe as being dead in trespasses and sins? You know, are we so entrenched in our ideological corners and even political partisan affiliations that we cannot see the need for those who may not agree with us to receive the gospel? Because if we're not careful, we may allow those political affiliations, ideological affiliations, and things of that nature to cut against the compassion we should have, the eternity-driven, the eternity-based compassion we should have for those who are not in fellowship, who have not submitted their lives to Jesus Christ. And if we have gotten to that place, we very well may be bound in idolatry and don't even know it. You know? We very well may be bound in idolatry and be completely unaware, because we can't see beyond our political blinders or our ideological blinders. Jesus said he was moved with compassion. The NESB says, where I'm reading from the ESV, it says the crowds were harassed and helpless. The NESB says distressed and dispirited or thrown down. You know, when we are engaging, when we're doing our thing on a daily basis, when we're consuming news, when we're interacting with friends and family members, are we moved with compassion on those who are outside of the ark that is Jesus Christ? You know, and this is something that I've mentioned before, but I felt compelled to revisit this. Because, man, the gospel is still the answer. The gospel is still the answer. I ask myself, Abe, can you pray for AOC? Can you pray? I'm talking about myself. I'm not talking to anybody else. As the Lord was searching me through this text, can you pray for Cory Booker? Lord, have mercy. You know? I'm just being candid. Because the gospel is still the answer. The gospel is still the power of God unto salvation. The gospel is still what transforms the hearts of men. When the Spirit of God illuminates the heart, mind, and soul of an individual to introduce life where there was dead, death in trespasses, and in sins, the gospel is still the answer. The gospel is still the answer. Then the next component, when we pray the Lord of the harvest to send laborers in the harvest field, are we willing to be those laborers? Are we willing to be those laborers? Because all too often, man, the gospel becomes, you know, people use the word gospel like a tagline. You know, the gospel imperative. And I think the gospel ends up being trifled as we have all of these types of conversations and we forget that they're real people that's caught up in this craziness that's going on. They are real people who are ensnared by the wicked logismos, ideologies, vain imaginations that are filling our culture, the lies and the deception. And the enemy's strategy is to consistently offer the stimuli so that we become desensitized to it. Now, when we think about the craziness that's going on, yeah, you know, it's, you know, the LGBT agenda, you know, these people support these things. But have we ever considered that there are people that are bound in these types of things that don't want to be bound, that want to be freed? We can never forget. That it was Jesus himself who encountered Saul on the road to Damascus to continue waylaying the followers of the way. But the Lord moved through an Ananias to lay hands on him to move the scales from his eyes. And remember how Ananias responded? Excuse me, Lord? Are you talking to me? You want me to do what? Don't you know who he's talking about, this man Saul? He's a persecutor of the way. And the Lord's like, dude, I'm God. Yeah, I know who I'm talking about. And he's waiting for you. And I want you to go and lay hands on him. And listen, I'm going to tell you, God could have done it any way he wanted to do it. Any way he wanted to. He could have opened Saul's eyes, turned his name to Paul, all on his own. But I think it's instructive for us that he intentionally highlighted his operation through Ananias to lay hands on the Apostle Paul. How beautiful are the feet of those who run with the gospel. Man, let's not be so consumed in idolatry where we won't even offer people the gospel. We won't even offer the gospel. The Lord didn't save us just for us, man. The Lord didn't build his testimony in us merely for us, man. Let's cry aloud and spare not. Can't you see that the time is ticking down? The hour is getting short. The day of the Lord is drawing nigh. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless. And listen, let me remind you, having compassion doesn't mean that you just passively go along with everything people want to offer you. No, it's the love of Christ that compels us to speak the truth in love. Speak the truth in love. We don't let the truth languish, nor do we let our love languish, but that we go forth in the power of God that he has granted to us and conveyed to us by his holy word. Man, let's light up the darkness.
Our religious freedom is at risk. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. An extremely dangerous piece of legislation is quickly progressing, dubbed the Equality Act. It has nothing to do with equality and everything to do with attacking religious liberty. The bill elevates sexual orientation and gender identity above our precious constitutional rights. If it becomes law, the consequences will be sweeping and totally catastrophic for Christians and other people of faith. Basically, people of faith will be punished by the government unless they compromise their sincerely held religious beliefs. The LGBT agenda will trump religious freedom in all areas of life. It's tyrannical, plain and simple. This is the worst bill that Congress has ever created. Countless Americans have bled and died so that we don't have to choose between following God and breaking the law. To stay informed about this attack on religious freedom, visit Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org/HR5.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Sometimes we get so tired, we just lose hope.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Hope in life itself. A guy named Elijah experienced that kind of bone-crushing tiredness. He'd been in conflict with a political leader and his wife. In fact, the conflict was so bad that Elijah gave up hope for life itself. In the midst of all that, he sensed a small voice talking to him saying, "There are people who share your same values and feel the same way you do, and I know who they are." In other words, don't lose hope. Jesus still does that today. As we tell him about our seemingly impossible situations in which there is no hope, he can still speak to us with a small voice, giving perspective and hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Father's Day is coming up, and we want to encourage you to give the Boy to Man book as a gift to the father of a 12-year-old son you know. The father might be your husband, your cousin, your nephew, your grandson, a member of your fellowship group, a neighbor, or your son's Little League coach. I had the privilege of being a guest on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk radio program, appearing with guest host Dr. Tim Clinton. Here's how a portion of that interview went.
Our special guest again today has been Brian Fisher. He's the author of a brand new work called The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. It's a must for every family out there.
If you order a book by June 7, we'll make sure to get you a signed copy by Father's Day. Go to afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Well, I'm going to start this segment off discussing this case. And here's the headline for this case. Supreme Court dodges case involving trans students in bathroom. Now, why did I read that headline like that? Partly because I felt like it was fun. But the main reason is because I feel like the headline is overblown. So let me get into the details of what I'm talking about. So today, the Supreme Court made the decision to deny certiorari to a case styled Doe versus Boyerton Area School District. Now, certiorari is just a big fancy term derived from the Latin that means that the Supreme Court would agree to hear a case. All right, this case is based on a situation where a school in Pennsylvania allowed transgender students to use restrooms that don't match their biological sex. All right, that's in Pennsylvania. The ADF represented a bunch of students there who were plaintiffs who argued that the school district's policy violated their privacy rights and amounts to sexual harassment. All right, now, of course, most of you who listen to the program, you guys know where I stand on these issues. But in case you don't, President Obama's transgender bathroom mandate was unconstitutional, in addition to immoral, in my opinion. This whole idea of using, attempting to reinterpret the Civil Rights Act, in this case, Title IX, where there are prohibitions on discrimination on the basis of sex, to read into that prohibitions of discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, that's just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. But I think it's non-helpful hyperbole to suggest this is an example of, one, the court dodging the issue of transgender bathrooms, and two, as an indication that the conservatives on the bench agree with the transgender ideology. And I'll tell you why. Because the Supreme Court has already accepted three cases, where the entire issue of the imposition on the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the entire panoply of the prohibitions of discrimination on the basis of sex, they've already accepted three cases to address that issue. Just as a reminder for those who may be new to the program, those cases are Altitude Express versus Zarda, Bostock versus Clayton County, Georgia, and RG and GR Harris Funeral Homes versus the EEOC. That last case I mentioned, the funeral homes case, comes from Michigan. The other two cases come from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, where the Sixth Circuit, where Michigan is, has already decided that they agree that this is crazy. Sexual orientation and gender identity already are provided protections against discrimination within the Civil Rights Act. The 11th Circuit has said, no, it doesn't. The word sex means male and female, just as we always understood in the history of our country, just as the arguments leading up to the adoption of that law states. And I agree with the 11th Circuit. Because of this circuit split, the Supreme Court has already accepted these cases and consolidated them, and they will announce their opinion on this issue in June. That's next month. So the decision today announcing their denial of cert in this particular case most likely is due to the fact that the Supreme Court has already reached its conclusion on these cases concerning the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So to say that the decision not to grant cert here is the court dodging the issue, they're not dodging the issue. Most likely they have already resolved the issue as they see it, and they are simply waiting to release that. They have already concluded. They're waiting to release that decision in those three cases, the Zarda case, the Bostock case, and the Harris Funeral Homes case. They're going to release that next month. So there will be no need necessarily, if their decision extends far enough to cover this particular case from Pennsylvania, there's no need to accept this case if they already have come to a conclusion that will affect the outcome in this case. Y'all get what I'm saying? That makes sense what I'm saying? So I think it's premature and it's hyperbolic to say the Supreme Court dodged the issue in this case because they've already accepted three cases where they're going to make that decision, where they're going to announce their decision on that issue coming up. All right? All right. So no need to panic just yet. Just yet. Now, this next story I'm going to cover, I have to tell you, it gave me chuckles. And some of you remarked that I chuckle. I chuckle just like this when I'm reading these stories, man. This is crazy. Before I get into the meat of the story, I want to take us on a trip back down memory lane. Not too far back down memory lane. Just in February of this year. Because, you know, I try to remind people so that we don't fall victim. To remind people of things that have already happened so that we don't fall victim to recency bias. Right? So New Mexico has a governor. Her name is Michelle Lujan Grisham. Michelle Lujan Grisham. Back in February, on the very day that President Trump finally offered his State of the Union address, Governor Lujan Grisham clearly anticipated the president to discuss the wall on the southern border. So much so that on this day in February 2019, Governor Lujan Grisham released for the first time on Twitter, a newly minted advertisement bolstering her campaign for the governorship. At that time, I want you to just get a, and I would, this is one of those moments where I wish I could show you the video, because you have to be, the video helps you, it adds a layer of consumption that you just don't get with the audio alone. But I want to set it up for you. Well, Governor Grisham is going to discuss some of the issues she felt were pertinent to the citizens of New Mexico, while she simultaneously expressed her disdain for President Trump's border wall policy. And so I want you to listen to this, and it's in clip number 3, and this is New Mexico's Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. Go ahead and play it, Jason.
I'm Michelle Lujan Grisham, New Mexico's 49th in employment and 50th for schools. We got to bust through some walls to make changes. I'll create public and private partnerships to rebuild our infrastructure. And here's what I think of Trump's wall.
Now, what you couldn't see, because most of you are listening, well, all of you are listening to the audio, those rumbling sounds where she says something, New Mexico is 49th for blah, 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 blah. You know all that rumbling? Blah, 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 blah. This woman is actually on video running through sheetrock walls. You know, the first little frame, she's in your typical, you know, politician, black, you know, suit, skirt, and a suit coat. And then she puts on, like, these safety goggles, and she busts through a wall, like, runs through a sheetrock wall. And then she keeps talking and boom, runs through another wall. And then she ends before with the last statement. And this is what I think about Trump's wall. She runs through another sheetrock wall with President Trump's face on a poster on the wall. And this is what I think about Trump's wall. Blah, 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 blah. You know, that is what you just heard. Not to be satisfied with that wonderful advertisement. I know you guys enjoyed that. She then goes further. And in her announcement that she's removing the National Guard in New Mexico from the southern border, I want you to hear how grandiose she proclaims her disagreement with the president's policy. Play clip number one, please.
I am not going to participate, nor do I think it's appropriate in any shape or fashion, to use the National Guard to attempt to militarize the border when we're dealing with asylum seekers who their constitutional rights continue to be breached in this fashion. I can do both here. Meet the Constitution, support those ranchers and a community that deserves our attention to solve as many of their unintended consequences related to this issue as possible.
Now, I'm not going to weigh in too heavily at this moment in time on this governor's convenient either ignorance or intentional ignoring of the fact that illegal aliens don't have constitutional rights. I mean, reading is fundamental, isn't it? Maybe not, if you don't care about the Constitution. You know, I'm just sick of people just slide that in like it's not a big deal at all. You know, the constitutional rights of illegal aliens. The constitutional rights. Like really? This is insanity. You know, it's kind of like the whole immigrants thing. You know, oh, these people don't like immigrants. They don't want immigrants coming to the country, as if there's no distinction between illegal immigration and legal immigration. Like, we don't know there's a distinction. No, we know. They don't want you to know that there's a distinction. I'm telling you, man, the word jujitsu is intentional. And I call it word jujitsu intentionally because it's verbal combat. Because they're trying to tenderize you so you give up what you know to be true. Citizens of the United States are the ones who are the beneficiaries of the rights conveyed or that are articulated as being protected by the Constitution. But leaving that on the side, did you hear her?
We're not going to listen to the president militarize our southern border. He's militarizing the southern border. We're going to remove all of our National Guard troops from the southern border.
Now, that was the tune she was singing then.
This is so funny to me.
3 months later... 3 months later, the governor of New Mexico is singing a different tune, ladies and gentlemen. She's singing a different tune. Why am I saying that? Because now, Governor Lujan Grisham is crying to the federal government, asking for their help to manage the impact of the border crisis in her state. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, Governor Lujan Grisham, just last week, was in Washington, D.C., and she met with Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan. And she asked Mr. McAleenan, sir, would you please increase the government personnel at the border in my state? Oh, yeah. I wish y'all could see Marty's eyes. Marty's like, oh, really? She's begging the Homeland Security Director to dispatch more federal resources in the form of people to the southern border. I wonder what changed her mind. Now, this is just 3 months later now. Because in February, she's running through walls. Boop. You know, remember the church song? I can run through a troop and leap over a wall. Like, she's running through walls in February. Now she's in May talking about that border. About that border, sir. We need more Homeland Security personnel down there because it's getting crazy. It's getting crazy. Luann Grisham asked the Director McAleenan, the acting Homeland Security Director, to increase government personnel at the border, as well as requesting additional funds to help with the humanitarian assistance, among other resources. The governor's spokesman, Tripp Stelnicki, said, quote, "The governor wants to continue to urge the federal government to increase its personnel on the border as a means of improving the logistical and communications output," end quote. So I'll translate that for all of us. I wonder, what does he mean by the logistical and communications output? I'll tell you, they need troops. These people are out of control, man. Now, she wants to pull this stunt in February because, you know, that's what her base probably wants. You know, not probably. That's clear. It's clear that's what her base wants. And she is the governor of a border state. So she's going to pull a stunt. Oh, there is no humanitarian crisis on the border. But now behind the scenes, like, she didn't think we were going to peek that out. Behind the scenes, after her big stunt, after her big Twitter video where she's running through walls, she's, excuse me, Mr. Acting Director, would you please send more resources our way? Because we are being overwhelmed on our southern border. And we don't quite know how to respond. We need some help. And I just wish these people would tell the truth. You know, and let's just be frank, you're not going to see this covered on any of the talking snake media outlets. You're not going to see the same governor who pulled this big stunt that formed the foundations for many of the other people parroting the narratives authored by the talking snake. You won't hear them saying that, oh, Governor Luann is changing her tune. The same governor who removed the National Guard from the southern border is now asking for federal resources to help. You won't hear that. And I'm just tired of people trying to play politics with every single thing. I've shared on this program, many of the cities on the border are getting 1,000 illegal immigrants a day. Per day. Many of these towns are smaller towns. They cannot absorb that type of consistent influx of people. And it's just insane. It's just insane. A couple more stories, but let me tell you, we're going to open the phone lines when we get to the next segment. I'll give the number out now for those who would like to call in. The number to call is 888-589-8840. Once again, it's 888-589-8840. That is the number to call. Now, I want to get your response. What do you think about this issue with the governor from New Mexico? What do you think about her asking for a policy mulligan? Can I do that over, please? Can I get a do over there? 1,000 a day, ridiculous. In some instances, even more than 1,000. But 1,000 a day is what's being averaged. Well, you have we're on pace to have 1.1 million people, illegal aliens, into the country this year. That is insane. That's on top of the 1 million legal immigrants we take in every year. And this is one of the issues that I had with the most recent announcement of President Trump's framework for his immigration policy, that it didn't include a reduction of current legal immigration rates. I mean, we can't continue doing it like this. We can't. He also didn't include E-Verify. It has some very good things in it. Very good things. But I don't think you can really get a handle on what's going on the border without cutting off the connection to the under-the-table employment that's going on in our country. Not if you want to be serious, you know. But that kind of stuff is just, we can't continue along those lines. And finally, the governor of New Mexico is coming to terms with that. I had a coach in high school who used to have this saying, pain stimulates the brain, baby. Sometimes you get smart once that hiney starts to hurt. And I think that is a little bit of what we're experiencing from the governor, that she's feeling the weight of the illegal immigration problem on our southern border. Now she's changed her tune.
I've been leading tours to Israel for over 25 years. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I started going to Israel with my dad in the 80s and learned how to lead tour groups. And so been doing it ever since. And now my wife has joined me, Allison, and we love taking folks who support AFA and listen to AFR to Israel. And we'd love to have you come along with us as well. That's in March of 2020. We're letting you know ahead of time because we know that people need as much advance notice as possible to get ready for a trip like this. So if you want to go with us to the Holy Land in March, go ahead and get the information at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. All the information on the March trip to Israel is posted there, and hope you can join us. Hello, this is Tim Wildman. A few days ago, I got a call from Franklin Graham's office, and they asked us to support their day of prayer for President Trump, June the 2nd. So along with more than 250 Christian leaders, I am asking followers of Christ across this nation to set aside that day. June the 2nd, Sunday, is a special day of prayer for our president. You know, President Trump is not perfect, but I've never seen anything like these attacks against him and his family and the values that he represents. Many of those values are our values, Christian values. In the history of our country, no president has ever been attacked as he has been. This is a critical time for America. We're on the edge of a precipice. Time is short. We need to pray for God to intervene. We need to ask God to protect, strengthen, and encourage and guide the President of the United States. Please join us in praying for the President on June the 2nd. Thank you.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A case of obscuring the picture next. Yearbooks are making the rounds at many schools across the Fruited Plain. At Littlestown High School in Pennsylvania, the yearbook is causing controversy. Earlier in the year, several teenagers wore Make America Great Again hats for Spirit Week. There was a photo of the event in the yearbook, but editors blurred the hats. They obscured the words Make America Great Again. Jeremy Gebhardt is one of the youngsters whose hat was blurred. He says everyone has First Amendment rights, and he says his rights were violated. Turns out, Jeremy is absolutely right. The school district issued a formal apology, said the editors should not have censored the boys' hats. He also called on the community to find a way to have civil discourse. Well, they can start by teaching the Yearbook Club not to censor other people's speech. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We will open the phone lines this segment. If you'd like to join the program, the number to call is 888-589-8840. The number again is 888-589-8840. Before we get to the calls, I just wanted to mention a couple things in passing. First, a lot of people have been responding to what's happening in the state of Alabama concerning their new law prohibiting abortion except for circumstances, medically necessary circumstances, I guess is a good way to describe it. Well, did you know that the state of Alabama in 2018 set a record for the number of children adopted from foster care? Now, one of the lies, and I have a whole list of other statistics that I could give you, but I won't do that right now. Time won't permit it. But the state of Alabama set a record in 2018. And for those that are in the back that think a little slower, that would be the year before their abortion bill, their law prohibiting abortions, except for medically necessary emergency circumstances, passed in medically necessary determined by a physician. Not the opinion of the individuals involved. I just thought that was interesting. Set a record for adopting out of foster care. So I just want you to have that for those who would try to say that, pro-lifers only care about a child. Y'all know how the argument goes. So I won't belabor that. Then I wanted to just share a little bit of this that I found to be, so that's what we're going to do, huh? A federal district court judge, where did I put it? Here we go. A federal district court judge by the name of Haywood Gilliam from the Northern District of California and that's important. The Northern District of California on Friday issued a 56-page ruling halting the usage by President Trump of $1 billion of money reallocated from the Department of Defense to build the wall on the southern border. Now I want you to think about what I just said. A federal district court judge. Now, the federal district court is the lowest rung of the federal judiciary. You have the district court, then you have the appellate court at the intermediate level, then you have the Supreme Court. You have a district court judge in California prohibiting the usage of funds to build a southern border wall in Yuma, Arizona, and in El Paso, Texas. I just want you to put that on your noggin for a second. I mean, last I checked, a district court judge meant a judge over a district. I kind of find it kind of crazy, kind of funny, that a judge in California can tell, first of all, the president what to do in Texas and Arizona. Isn't that interesting? It kind of undercuts the very reason for having a district court judge, don't you think? And y'all know the drill. You have forum shopping, people going to judges, going to courts where, you know, they feel like they can have the best shot of winning. That's called forum shopping. That's not supposed to be allowable in the United States of America. But it seems to be a consistent notion that's happening when it comes to suing against the president's policy objectives. Now, I mentioned to you that this judge is named Haywood Gilliam of the Northern District of California, which I have not yet mentioned to you is that Mr. Gilliam was appointed to the bench by former President Barack Obama and assumed office December 19th, 2014. But this is after. Somebody going to be mad right now. They're going to be mad already. Judge Gilliam had given nearly $30,000 to Democrat politicians and Democrat political action committees. According to federal election records, Judge Gilliam, before being appointed to the bench, I want to make that clear, he donated $6,900 to former President Barack Obama's campaign in 2008. He then also donated $14,500 to President Obama's reelection campaign in 2012. The same federal election records also indicate that he contributed $4,500 to the Democratic National Committee in 2012. And between 2012 and 2015, he spent $3,100 on the Covington Burling LLP PAC, which gives money to candidates from both parties. But the overwhelming majority of Judge Gilliam's donations before becoming a judge were to President Barack Obama's campaigns and to the Democrat Party. Isn't that interesting? I just find that to be interesting, that you basically can just make your way to the federal bench by making donations. I thought it was a trash, you know? Donations. Next thing you know, I'm appointed to a federal bench. Pretty interesting. We had a great comment. I want to make sure I get the right person on the Facebook stream. I don't want to mispronounce his name. Atilade. Man, if I'm mispronouncing your name, I'm sorry. Said that it also is nullifying the reason for us having a president. If you have judges who can say, president, you have an idea for exercising your executive power? Nah, you can't do it. And the thing that I found amazing is that this Judge Gilliam, Judge Gilliam said that a part of his reasoning for finding the president usage of these funds unconstitutional because he sees it as an end run around Congress. Let me read it. Because here we go. This is a part of his ruling. Quote, the position that when Congress declines the executive's request to appropriate funds, the executive nonetheless may simply find a way to spend those funds without Congress does not square with the fundamental separation of powers principles dating back to the earliest days of our republic, end quote. I have two things to say in response to that. First and foremost, has this just never heard of the National Emergencies Act? I mean, the last I checked, the National Emergencies Declaration Act was an act of Congress. that under certain circumstances, including the declaration of national emergencies, it gives the president the authority to do what he just did. But I guess Judge Gilliam couldn't be bothered with that. Then my next question, because y'all know I have a follow-up, is I wonder where Judge Gilliam was when former President Obama, who he gave money to in the thousands of dollars, by the way, in his campaigns, when President Obama enacted the DACA policy after Congress refused to pass it repeatedly. Repeatedly. And oh, did I even mention that there was no congressional action allowing the president to do DACA? In contrast with what President Trump is doing, where the National Emergency Declaration Act clearly gives the president the authority to do it. I just find that interesting. How, you know, these constitutional principles, they become important depending on what you want to accomplish.
It violates the separation of powers. He didn't get the money from Congress, so...
Man, that is rich. That is rich. None of these people had anything to say about President Obama's use of his pen and his phone when he couldn't get DACA passed. But now they say, oh, he's trying to make it and run around Congress. Congress didn't give him the money. Man, and look, and I'm sick and tired of Congress just letting the judges do whatever they want and not saying anything. If there's one thing that we need to do is that we need to get on our Congress members' case, because the Congress is the branch of government that reigns in rogue judges. That's the branch. And they need to be held accountable too. To the phone lines, we'll start in Arkansas where Michael is on the line. Michael, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Abe, I'm glad I got through. I've been listening to you for about 4 months now. Really like the program. I have three really fast points to make, and I'll get off and let the next person come on. First of all, lady in New Mexico, it's no different than an atheist crying out to God on their deathbed. You know, ignore him the whole time, won't help when things go wrong at the end. And people don't pay attention to the fact that they built an Arch of Baal looking over the Capitol, which is probably why all this stuff with abortion is going on and they want to kill babies. No more than Baal worship. And third, we should have all of our elected officials take civics classes before they get elected.
Thank you for your call and your comments. Michael, we're going to go next to Kansas where Mary is on the line. Mary, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Well, I just want to say if the governor would quit running through walls, wasting the taxpayers' money, she'd have more money to protect her border. And if they would tell the truth in front of our snaky medium and quit hiding behind the cameras, then saying the truth, what's really going on, just think how much better our government would be. And I want to remind people, January the 2nd, when you go to church, pray for President Trump. Franklin Graham's asking everybody to do that for him and his family. And if you got your T-shirt standing in the gap, wear it to church Sunday and turn around and have everybody read it. And thank you, Mr. Hamilton, and your staff for what all you do.
Thank you, Mary, for your call and your comments. Yeah, the spot just played where the American Family Association President Tim Wildman mentioned that our ministry will participate in praying for the president. And that is biblical, folks. The Bible instructs us to pray for our leaders, and finding people who would object to praying for our leaders, man, that's amazing to me. I mean, I prayed for President Obama when he was in office. The Bible talks about praying for our leaders that we may be able to live peaceable and quiet lives. That's what the Bible says. You know, that's what the Bible instructs us to do. So it would be wise for us to pray for our leaders. So I definitely support the initiative to pray for President Trump on June 2nd. Thank you for your call and your comments. We'll go next to Charles in Texas. Charles, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, thank you for clearing that up about the Supreme Court Justice not taking up that case today. I read it. I was at work today, and I read the headline. I was like, what's going on with the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
But thank you for clearing that up. And I was going to comment on the New Mexico governor, but I wanted to ask you another question. I changed it to mid-thought. I did catch something on Fox News about Barr and the president. I caught the end of it. They were talking about the rogue judges just making coming in and overruling the president. And you said that Congress is only is that the only power that can reel in these rogue judges? Thanks, Abe.
Thank you, Charles. That's a good question. That is the constitutional authority granted to the Congress. So I've explained this before. Federal district court judges are Article III judges, the only court
that is created expressly by the Constitution is the United States Supreme Court. Okay? Article 3 courts, or should it, let me say it this way, the appellate court system and the federal district court system are expressly created by the Congress. So just as Congress created them, Congress has the power to uncreate them. Congress can dissolve a court. Congress can create a new court. Congress is the also the branch that is responsible with holding the judges accountable for adhering to their oath of office. So perfect example, when now retired Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Richard Posner said that he felt like it was a complete waste of time for federal judges to spend time reading the Constitution, learning the Constitution, studying the amendments, studying the constitutional conventions, understanding the arguments that led to the adoption of the various amendments and articles in the Constitution. I felt like that was grounds for articles of impeachment to be drawn up. Because if you think the Constitution is irrelevant, how can you adhere to your oath to uphold the Constitution? You can't. But Congress has gotten into the place, and this is true on many fronts, folks, where they have abdicated their oversight responsibilities and their legislative responsibilities, to where we are basically being governed primarily by executive-level agencies. Far more regulations prior to the Trump administration coming in were being issued by these agencies than actual legislation was adopted by the Congress. That's not how our framers created our federal system to work. And frankly, we have such a populace that has become really constitutionally illiterate, we don't even understand that elected representatives are really our civil servants. They are meant to serve us. And so they kind of get away with this, and they've gotten away with it for so long that it's created a culture of that in our country. But the Congress is the branch of government that is supposed to rein in these federal judges. That is the branch. Back to the phone lines. I can say more on that. Maybe we'll later on this week. We'll go next to Louisiana, where Jeanette is on the line. Jeanette, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Abe. So happy to get in to hear you and talk to you. I will be calling back in the future, but I got two quick questions. Why don't we go to the system that Israel has, where they have no juries and they have the directory of court, and it's only like five, I think, districts? Courts there.
Okay, and what's your second question?
Second question is, I'm telling people, and it's not a question, but what I'm out telling people is the reason why we have the border and to monitor people coming in is it's actually protecting the illegal or what illegal. Because
yeah.
if they just come in here anywhere, people can grab them and do God knows whatever they want to. We're not mistreating them by that way.
That's right. Jeanette, thank you for your call and your comment and your question. So to answer your first question, one thing we have to remember is that Israel is a very small country. I mean, it's about the size of the state of New Jersey in America. And secondarily, we have a constitution. So when you consider the size of Israel, which may have, what, I don't know, maybe 3 million people, 2 million people, there are 330 some odd million people in the United States of America. So our system, will by the very sheer breadth of our populace be different. But the issue is not with the system, the way that the founders created it. The issue that backlogs our country is how the system is being abused. The founders never promulgated an idea where the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of all things legal in the country. In fact, the idea of co-equal branches of government is not one found in the Constitution. We have the judiciary, which was the smallest and least impactful of the federal branches of government. More on this in the future because I ran out of time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.